The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements that may not come true. Securities investment advisory services offered through Grove Point Financial, member FINRA/SIPC. Grove Point Financial and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies. And folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
It is 8:06 on this Saturday morning on AM 550 FM 99.9 WSAU and online at WSAU.com as well. I'm WSAU News Director Mike Leishner, joined in studio by Merle Kelch, as we are going to make some financial sense today. Merle, how bored are you at work?
Pretty bored
this week. I mean,
well, I've been real enormously busy, but the news has been really kind of boring.
Oh, okay.
Unless you have a ship or a hurricane or something. Yeah, otherwise, there's hasn't been much chatter almost any place.
Yeah. Merle has been marked safe from the earthquake on the on the East Coast, by the way, in case anybody was wondering. But you know, my initial thought was, you know, when something like that happens on the East Coast, what does it mean for the markets? Obviously, the New York Stock Exchange and everything is right there, but it seems like everything was pretty well unfazed.
Yeah, pretty much nothing. Yeah, what's interesting about that is you brought something up, and many people probably don't know this, but when we had 9/11, and when 9/11 happened and the buildings hit the planes and everything, so much power was lost in Manhattan. The Dow Jones Industrial Average had to shut down. They had no power to run.
So I believe it was about a week.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Before they had power, NASDAQ continued on. NASDAQ could have fired up, but they shut down out of respect for everything else. And since then now, there's a whole entire backup system, so if something does happen with the Dow in Manhattan, this kind of stuff, it runs on. So many people don't realize NASDAQ stands for a National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotations. So it's been a computer program for a long time, though humans, of course, run it. So there's a backup. So if it shuts off there, it just goes to different systems. The Dow did not have that. Okay. Does now.
As
a result of that. So the Dow continued on as it was supposed to.
Everything went everything went on. There's been some transportation issues and things like that. Even the New York Yankees continued to take batting practice in the middle of it. That was an interesting video.
They just shook more, and they improved their average.
Exactly. 715-845-2155 is the number to call if you've got a question for Merle. Good morning. You're making financial sense. Who are we talking to?
We're talking with Phil.
Phil?
Phil from beautiful downtown Hancock.
Morning, Phil from beautiful downtown Hancock.
Question for you, not getting a lot of information because I don't have cable. I just have my antenna on my roof for TV and stuff.
But okay.
It was reported that Ford lost $4.5 billion in their switch over to electric, and they're reporting that it's unsustainable and they no longer will be able to continue with the electric car program, and that their profits are going to have to be made up with their regular car market.
Mm-hmm.
And then GM released a statement pretty much the same. So I don't know what you heard about it and what's your take on it?
I have not read any recent article about Ford, but Ford has said that all along. When Ford started developing its EV, of course, it's electric vehicles, they had said they expected to lose billions of dollars as they built out a whole new technology. So they had expected to do that, and they had planned it in their budget. So their ICE vehicles, which I think is kind of a cool name, stands for, of course, internal combustion engines, that was to be driving the EV marketplace for a long period of time. And so there's nothing new about this with Ford. They had planned it, they expected it, they announced it. Now, what I do find interesting, though, as part of this, and I think you touched upon something, and by the way, Phil, I have an idea for you to get better reception. You have to make Viking horns out of aluminum foil, and it really helps your TV reception, just like cable.
Like when we had black and white TVs.
Exactly. Absolutely. And now you have to get a kid to hold the antenna, too. You know. So get some of the grandkids out there. So anyway, what I think is interesting in here, and I don't have any prediction about it, I only find it interesting in the sense that two things this week popped up. With Ford, we did not hear anything from General Motors, who members said that they wanted to be entirely electric vehicles, and I think the year was 2035 is what they said.
Yeah, it was ambitious.
And now that seems to have slowed down too. Also, oddly enough, we find out that people aren't buying as many Teslas.
Right.
Interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't seem like it's going to work, Merrill.
What I'm worried
yeah. about is, you know, all those poor people that they've already laid, Ford's already had massive layoffs and GM.
Mm-hmm.
And the switchover, are they all the rest of these people going to lose their jobs too? And what's that going to do to the market?
Well, I think we continue on with the ICE or the internal combustion engines. I think those continue on. I think there was much learned with all the electrical vehicle stuff that we had. And you know what? Quite frankly, I was having a big thought in my mind. And Phil, if you've listened to this program, I joke about this all the time because other people play video games or do fun stuff or play cards. I sit in a dark room and I think about stuff. And that's kind of frighteningly, actually. You know, kind of a little frightening. And so as I'm coming around, I'm thinking to myself, you know, electric vehicles aren't bad. I don't have a problem with an electric mm-hmm. vehicle. I just don't have the expectations and the bunny hugging fluffy stuff, thinking that they're going to solve the world's problems or not. But I think what an electric vehicle does do is if we have a urban area, not rural by any means, but if we have an urban area, I think the electric vehicles help to clean it up locally, but it transfers the pollution to a power station where we might be able to control that pollution a lot better. I don't see a problem with that, but again, I don't think it's cheaper. I don't think it's going to change the world. It just changes to where we might be able to control the pollution better. Okay, I don't have a problem with that.
And then I got, it gets this, like the F-150 electric. Yeah. I mean, it's unusable for, I'm a farmer.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
yeah.
just unusable for me because if I got to drive 150 miles to pick up some cows, I can't get there and back.
Yeah, well, not only that, but now you put the weight of the cows in here, and the back looking worse.
So it basically doesn't work for rural America at all.
Yeah, and it doesn't. So, you know, if I'm living in a city and I want a little electric vehicle to run around grocery store back and forth, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with it at all. The issue that's happening then inside of a lot of the urban areas is that they're having a problem charging their cars. So there's, and I can't think of his name, but on CNBC, one of the commentators throughout the course of the day said he went out and bought the Mustang electric that they had, and he said the car was a blast. It was fast. It was quick. But the problem was, if you're living inside of the brownstones, if you know what that is, and you have to park in the street, he said, how do you charge your car with the exception of running an extension cord out of your car?
Right.
And then somebody steals your extension cord. He said, I have a problem with this. I have to go back to a gas engine car. And I think there's just a lot of stuff like that they didn't think about. And we have government entities that didn't think about the reality of it. We just have to go back. And I know we joked about it, I think last week, actually, Mike, about, and I believe it was actually New Jersey, when they had the cold spell that went through, they couldn't charge any cars. And there was a parking lot full of dead Teslas and electric vehicles mm-hmm. because none of the charging stations worked. Just
right,
realities that are out
pre,
there.
So, as far as pre-enterprise, you know, I think it would have been Carter was president. He took off the government mandates like Ford and Chevy are under right now. He took them all off, and then now they've all kind of snuck back in. Instead of a free enterprise, dictate the stock market, dictate who wants to build what.
Capitalism is a beautiful thing. I just started reading a book, and I'm only maybe a dozen pages into it, called 400 Years of American Capitalism. And I look back and I thought to myself, well, the country hasn't been here for 400 years, but they're going back to the free enterprise where people left, England and Spain and came over to America mm-hmm. and said, hey, we just want to do this on our own. And look at the expansions that it's created. Yeah, I think if you're going to try to mandate something, it's just not going to work. It's not the American way. You just have to make it better so that it makes more sense and more fiscally sense in America.
Right, because I could think about buying a truck. I could think about buying an electric truck. If the free market dictated that I could get 300 or 400 miles out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I can't, I can't buy one.
Yeah, Phil, I think what's going to end up going, now I'm like you, I've got the big diesel Denali, I use it for pulling I don't work like you, I'm not a farmer, but I have a hobby tractor and some land and campers. But you just can't beat it. And I can, drive for 600 miles. It's fantastic. Just not going to be able to do that with an electric truck. But I think what's going to end up coming out of this is this. I think Toyota had one heck of an idea, and they called it their Synergy Drive, where they had a small gas engine that was firing up essentially fuel cells that ran the electric vehicle. This is the backbone of the Toyota Prius. They have other Synergy Drives in the middle of that. And I think that really becomes the direction for many vehicles, because not only because it does it become more efficient, but you're getting better mileage and everything out of it. And I think that might be the best thing that's going to come out of this whole thing, is that type of a synergy drive, as well as the electric component systems that were developed inside of electric vehicles to make that and potentially more self-driving vehicles as a result of it. So I think good happened out of it. I just don't know that we're going to have a long-term solution with electric vehicles yet.
This is my final question.
Yeah.
If the company can't make it, how are they going to get around with the mandates around them?
Well, I think the government's just going to have unrealistic expectations. It's just going to have to change it. I don't think there's any other direction around that. We look at companies, electric vehicle makers that came up, Rivian. They look like they're about done. I think Fisker is done. We look at Nikola, which is trying to do it with trucks. Well, they kind of lied on their numbers, too. It looks like they're going to be done. And so these are all people that are coming up with brand new ideas. Now, other companies have bought in and bought up their technology and their data. But I don't think there's going to be any way you're going to have a mandate if nobody's going to build it or buy it. You can have the best mandate in the world, but if nobody's going to buy the vehicle, it's not going to go. And I think that's what we're starting to see.
Well, thanks for your insight, Merle.
I do appreciate it, Phil. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Alrighty, bye-bye.
Again, 715-845-2155 is the number to call if you have a question for Merle. A lot of ground covered there. I think the bottom line is, and Merle, I promise I will get you a pen during the first break. Merle is trying to use an ink pen that apparently is running out, which is news in itself. I mean, whoever goes through all the ink in a pen before losing it?
Yeah.
Exactly. The big thing is, like you said, it may not be the be-all, end-all that some people say it will be, but they certainly have their place. I know the Ford F-150 Lightning was brought up in there, and really what Ford has done is they are marketing that to construction companies, saying, mm-hmm. hey, we can get your men to the job. We might be able to power a few of your bandsaws and other, nail guns.
Have somebody else come pick them up.
And then, exactly. maybe get you back as well. Yeah. But so these, they may have their place. It just may not be the be-all, end-all that some people may think it is.
I think the electric vehicle market, and again, this is just my humble opinion, the electric vehicle market is going to be in, Chicago, New York, St. Louis, Milwaukee, for the commuters who are doing 15, 20 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
It fits that perfectly. But for a rural community where you're doing some work and that kind of stuff, it's just proving that it's not working. It also, batteries in cold weather, especially lithium-ion batteries, don't work so hot.
Exactly.
They have problems.
Yeah.
So I think I just think that it's got limited usefulness.
Again, for somebody like me who only lives a couple miles from the office, I would absolutely love to be able to do that and have that as an alternative. But I also need a vehicle that will get me 480 miles from here to South Dakota.
And a Vespa's not going to do it.
Yes. And hope that I'm not stranded on the side of Minnesota 60 between Lake Crystal and Windham, waiting for somebody with a diesel-powered generator to come
charge your car.
Yeah, get me to Worthington.
Perfect.
Yeah, indeed. And if anybody knows all three of those communities that I just said in Minnesota,
I mean, they're probably related to you.
Yeah, give me a call. We'll give you a cookie or something. 715-845-2155 is the number to call. We'll be back with more after this here on WSAU.
The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements that may not come true. Securities Investment Advisory Services offered through Grove Point Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Grove Point Financial and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies. And folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
22 minutes after 8 o'clock on AM 550, FM 99.9 WSAU, and online at WSAU.com as well. Merle Kelch joining us live in studio here for another edition of Making Financial Sense. And we mentioned earlier about things about Merle that are concerning. It appears to me right now that Merle is reading something on his phone, and that is always always concerning. If Merle is thinking or reading, that means something dangerous could happen.
Well, the problem is, you know, when I was 30 years old, I remember all the numbers. Now I have to go back and reference them again and look at the numbers. So there's one thing I wanted to put out here because we had something happen for the first time ever. So we briefly talked about it before. The Federal Reserve at one particular point in time paid no interest to banks, but banks were required to keep a certain amount of deposit at the Federal Reserve. Part of our Federal Reserve system, it made the banking system go. And how interest rates were set back and forth was because of the banking system. And so banks were, for example, at one point in time, it was 2%, and I believe it's now been expanded to 6%. So if somebody knows, you can correct me if I'm wrong in that, but I believe I'm right. But it used to be that the Federal Reserve didn't pay any interest, but you had to keep a deposit at the Federal Reserve just to make sure all the books balanced and the books had to balance every day. And so as a result of that, then, if I needed some money inside of my account because I was short $5 million for the day, I could go to the bank of Mike and say, Mike, I need to borrow money overnight. In fact, they call it overnight money. Mm-hmm. And Mike could borrow me the money for overnight at a certain interest rate. And that usually set the interest rates that were going on inside of it. Though the Federal Reserve would still have an interest rate policy, it was usually more from a competition standpoint that helped solve that. Mm-hmm. Well, as a result of 2008 and a financial scare, the Federal Reserve, in the interest of trying to have more money coming into the Federal Reserve and held there, started paying interest rates. Well, when interest rates are at, you know, 0.25%, didn't really matter much. But now this past year, with interest rates at 5.4% from a Federal Reserve standpoint, now the Federal Reserve has lost, and of course it just disappeared on me in a page, but the Federal Reserve now lost last year $114 billion because of interest payments that had to pay out to the various banks that held deposits on the inside. So this is the first time that we had a loss, and they're saying this is temporary. But at the same time, it used to be that the Federal Reserve, because of the interest rates that it was holding on the money that were inside of the deposits lending it back out, would add on an average of $75 billion annually to the federal treasury. Because the Federal Reserve can't hold profit, that money goes to our treasury, helps all of us as taxpayers. So it's interesting as we continue on with this unlimited amount of money that the Federal Reserve is just having, versus as they had the scarce model, which meant that the Federal Reserve didn't pay interest, but mandated that the banking system had to have deposits with it. So it's interesting it comes along, and they make a case in here that the Federal Reserve seems to be more and more political, and it's not supposed to be. It's interesting to see that as the Federal Reserve is supposed to be, and by mandate is supposed to be independent of what happens with the government. Mm-hmm. Folks, we do not want a central bank, and that's the reason the Federal Reserve is existing. So it'll be interesting to see how these next several years come along.
So then on that note, when we see the interest rates where they are right now and talk that there may be declines, there may be some drops in the near future. We don't know how many. We don't know when. We know there could be as many as three. All that speculation by now. What does this mean for people that have their money in the banks, that have the credit cards, the other not fixed rate interest products? Does that mean pay them down as quickly as possible because we don't know where this is going
to
go?
Yeah, this part really doesn't have so much to do with that, though I'm not going to say there's not some sort of a ripple effect that's in there, but it really doesn't do that. This really comes down into that if the Federal Reserve is having that loss, nobody seems to know, does that loss come through the Treasury Department that they issue more bonds and you and I as taxpayers have to pay that loss? Or is it a loss that's internally within the Federal Reserve system that they take care of it internally inside? So the question becomes is that if they had extra money and they were paying it to the Federal Reserve as they're supposed to, or into the Treasury Department, I'm sorry, not the Federal Reserve, but the Treasury Department, would the Treasury Department then pay them back for the loss? We don't know. This is kind of new. First time it's ever happened. So as far as, you know, interest rates, credit cards, mortgages, that whole bit, the Federal Reserve is still going to continue on with their mandate of keeping inflation low and full employment, which we'll talk about the temper tantrums happening with the market this past week. But we don't know the answer to this on how this goes from a Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. It's the first time the Federal Reserve has ever had a deficit ever since 1917 when the Federal Reserve was created. So it's interesting to see what happens on that. And this is one of those things that just kind of make you go, well, again, or weirdos like me that like this stuff. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens from a taxpayer standpoint. And if the taxpayers are going to have to pay that, you know, now it almost becomes political, because now you have a system that is at a federal taxpayer deficit and has to go to the taxpayer for money. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes it political. I think we need to go back to the old model of not paying interest on reserves and requiring reserves of the banking system. Seems to be a better way.
I personally just think we need to bring the Whig Party back, but that's just me. 715-845-2155 is the number to call if you have a question for Merle. We'd be happy to connect you and get you on here for this edition of Making Financial Sense on WSAU and online at WSAU.com as well. Merle, you mentioned it was an up, or down, up and down kind of temper tantrum-y type week. I believe the phrase that was used on Your Money Now on Friday when I downloaded that and put it in the log in the afternoon was an up and down week ending on a low note, which, of course, in my tongue-in-cheek and oversimplification says Merle had a bad week.
It was an interesting week. Definitely interesting. So in here, all of a sudden the market came out, jobs report came out that said jobs are strong, unemployment dropped a little bit. In fact, jobs came in at 300,000, the expectation was 200, and it was a robust jobs report. A lot of times it's out of the jobs report, you can look at it and say, well, it's skewed one way or another because of one reason or another, and this wasn't, it was a solid jobs report. Unemployment ticked down from 3.9 to 3.8. Consumer spending is doing really well, and people went around and said, what, we're not going into a recession yet? Oh my God, the Federal Reserve may not drop interest rates in June. Oh, they may not drop them all at all this year. And people went, oh, we don't like that. And I think the little kids held their breath until they passed out and decided they weren't going to breathe, and they fell over, and it made the market drop. Fundamentally, nothing's changed in the marketplace from where we were 2 weeks ago. In fact, the numbers are showing that we continue to keep having growth. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that we're not going to have a slowdown or recession at some point. Eventually, I'll be right. I don't know if it's going to be in 6 months or 2 years, but eventually I'll be right. And the only reason I'm saying that is where the interest rates are right now, it's going to slow the economy. I don't know that we have a recession or not. And the trade-off that the Federal Reserve and Chairman Powell are trying to have is saying, at what point do we have the economy slow down enough that we do not have an interest rate problem? I'm sorry, an inflation problem. We get that settled up. And we start injecting lower interest rates, which puts money into the system, so that we avoid having a recession. And so that's the balancing act. Where is it going to happen? Who knows? But it appears, though, it's not going to happen right now. So hopefully these little kids stood up and started breathing again and stopped having blue faces. And, you know, somebody said, all right, move along. You know, let's get back to doing the work again. We go forward. So we'll see what happens. Now, I don't think we're going to have this expectations of rates or returns that we've been having. You know, we had a tremendous year in 23. You look at the Dow plus 20%. I'm sorry, the S&P plus 20%. You know, the Dow, I think the Dow finished up at about 12.5 last year for return. Don't quote me on that one, but I think I'm close. This first quarter of the year, we're seeing many portfolios that are up 7 to 9%, depending upon what they are, just this first quarter of the year. But the expectation isn't that it's going to continue on that pace. You know, in the beginning of the year, my expectation for the year, based upon what we're seeing, the economy slowing, is I said, yeah, maybe we'll be 8% for the year, something like that. Well, we're almost there already. Mm-hmm. So I think we see the marketplace go relatively sideways for a bunch of this year. And if I'm wrong, folks, and it goes up, Yahtzee, you know, we're all okay.
Yes.
But that's not the expectation. Based upon what we're having with profits, profits are good. Not exceptional and crazy, but the profits are good. People are still going to work. Consumers are spending. You and I are still out there spending money. At the same time, we're seeing unemployment's pretty good and relatively low. That means we're going to have a good economy. A good economy is usually about 8% if we have some growth to it. And it appears, though, that's the case at this point. So I think we have a lot of the growth of the marketplace is already built in that we've made in this first quarter. We kind of go sideways, maybe make a few points throughout the course of the rest of the year. And God bless it, if I'm wrong and it goes higher, I'm not going to be upset with that.
He's Merle Kelch. We're Making Financial Sense on AM 550, FM 99.9 WSAU, and online at WSAU.com as well. We'll be back with more after this.
The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements that may not come true. Securities investment advisory services offered through Grove Point Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Grove Point Financial and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies. And folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
8:37 on this Saturday morning. No, we haven't left. We're still here. It's Making Financial Sense on AM 550, FM 99.9 WSAU, online at WSAU.com as well. You just heard the promo. Brewers baseball coming up tonight, 5:35, Milwaukee against the Seattle Mariners. The old Seattle Pilots against the new Seattle Pilots, as I like to say. Very exciting ending last night. Brewers and M's go to the bottom of the ninth, tied at five. And the Brewers work four walks in the inning. Four walks, of course, equals one run. A true walk-off. Most exciting way to end a game. I mean, Merle was there, actually, and I'm pretty sure he went bonkers over it.
No, I wasn't there.
No, he wasn't.
I would have gone bonkers. That would have been crazy.
Yeah, every time you go to the ballpark, you're going to see something. There's a chance to see something you haven't seen before. So
indeed so. I saw myself walk there once. So, Well, I mean, just from the parking lot.
Yeah, just from the parking lot. Exactly.
There's an article that's out there, and it's an opinion piece, and it's one for us to think. So it's an opinion piece by Kenneth Rogoff. Rogoff, one of those two. So anyway, the opinion piece says the U.S. stock market has outperformed Europe for years, and 2024 could be different. You know, part of diversification, folks, is the matching up the things that work inversely. And that kind of sounds a little crazy, but here's my quick synopsis of it. So the U.S. marketplace, we always say that starts low and ends high because we're the U.S., so we always start low and get better. But let's say that goes up, down, up, down, up, down. So we buy the inverse of the U.S. marketplace, which, of course, would be the international marketplace, and it goes down, up, down, up, down, up. So what happens when you blend the two together, we don't get the risk of either one, but we get an average between both. And so as a result of that, part of modern portfolio theory, it puts you into the efficient market frontier. You guys taking notes that you're listening for this?
Efficient market frontier,
right. So it finds us, at some particular point, it finds us the sweet spot of the best return for the least amount of risk. And this is the backbone of how you diversify a portfolio. Folks, diversifying a portfolio isn't saying, well, let's try this. That's not how you diversify a portfolio. We had some good people, some good clients that says, well, we're going to sell some stuff, so we're going to sell the stuff that has the highest expenses. No, that still doesn't cut it. Highest expenses doesn't mean that it's going to have the least rate of return. In fact, in our instance, we showed with a client, the one that had the highest expense had the highest rate of return last year. Now, that was just last year. And I'm not saying it's always, but it just happened to be that case in this example. But the biggest thing you want to have is you want to have that diversification, and you want to match up those things that have inverse relationships because it helps you control the risk. It's a backbone for modern portfolio theory. And if you're bored, go into your computer, type out modern portfolio theory. Your computer will go crazy. You'll have something to do for the weeks ahead. So in here, the U.S. stock marketplace has been doing really well. The internationals have slowed down. But inside of this article, they make a couple of points that I think are noteworthy in taking a look at it. You know, first of all, we take a look at the deficits we saw, you know, with France and all that's improving. Italy, if you remember right, several years ago, in fact, in the latter part of the 90s and early 2000s, remember Italy was having riots all over the place because they said, no, you're not retiring at 57 years old if you're an artist. You're going to actually go to work until 65 like the rest of us. And there were riots going on all over the place because for years the political people who were running Italy just kept making it that you could retire on their version of Social Security earlier and earlier and earlier. And as an artist, boy, I think it was like 38 if you're an artist to get to retire. And so some craziness like this, and when they finally went through and said, no, it's going to be 65 like the rest of the world, they had riots in the streets, all the stuff going on. Well, you know what? Interesting is that Italy is growing again. It appears to be on a positive trajectory right now. So that's growing. Greece, which is still having an underground economy, is struggling because people just decide they're not going to pay taxes and are trying to get over the tax evasion. But as a area in Europe, it looks like it's coming along fairly good. And so they might be one of those places we look at. And again, folks, talk with your financial professional. It's nothing we're telling you to run out to do. But it's interesting that this might be coming into play. And interesting enough, international investments last year, did pretty nice. I mean, they weren't like the U.S., you know, mm-hmm. you're just crazy stuff. But it was a nice, consistent return that helped take some of the volatility out of the up and down of the AI marketplace we saw in portfolios last year. So interesting, but take a look at some of those relationships between U.S. and global and international marketplace, folks. Maybe one of those things that you want to talk to your financial professional and make sure you have some exposure to inside of your portfolio.
715-845-2155 is the number to call if you have a question for Merle. And Merle, just bringing this down kind of to the basics, and this is maybe a question that it gets asked on visit one or visit two with Merle Kelch at his office on Bridge Street in Wausau if you are going to.
That's a pretty good plug.
Yes, well, indeed. Take up Merle on his offer for services here, which he will give you at the end of the show. How often should you be tweaking the portfolio like that? Because you mentioned inverse. You want maybe something that's going up at the same time that something else in your portfolio is not doing a whole lot to offset those losses. How often should you be looking at and tweaking things like that in your portfolio instead of, you know, my standard tongue-in-cheek line for you, which is, oh my goodness, everything was down this week. I pulled all my money out.
Mm-hmm. How often should you tweak it? Regularly and not a lot. There's two different scenarios. So how often do we look at it? If we have a client that's taking money out, let's say every month, they're retired, or every quarter, they're taking money out, saying, okay, we're going to, you know, stay alive, and this is going to be the monthly money that's going to our checking account, whichever the case may be. We all know we're there. And so with that, what we do is we actually balance the portfolio pretty much every month, because if we're drawing money out, I want to rebalance the portfolio, but in reverse. Does that make sense? So if we're taking out $1,000, I want to say is one of the things that we have, the small, medium, large, growth, value, international, whatever the case may be. If we're over a little bit, I want to reverse, rebalance it. So we do that just because we're taking money out. We want to make sure we're taking out in the right place. So if we're taking out the thing that went up in value, it's weird because it forces us to actually take investments when they went up. Huh, there is an idea.
Yeah.
All right. So tongue-in-cheek, a little bit of humor there, folks. So the other part of that is, let's say we have a 401k or an investment we're not taking those distributions from. I'm not going to go through there, and I don't on a practice, to go through and say, well, we're up $500 this month, we're going to sell it and buy something else. No, we're not going to do that. Well, we'll wait until we get something that makes sense if we need to rebalance a portfolio. But generally what happens is people are putting money away and saving over the years. We can look at it and say, okay, a person put in their IRA distribution for a contribution this year. We can look at it and say, all right, so the $6,000 or $7,000 or $5,000 they have, is there a deficit someplace else in a portfolio where we have a percentage that we're light on? So it's really handy if it all turns up to be inside of one place. Of course, yesterday I had, you know, five accounts that were $1,000 here, $2,000 there. It's like crap, you know, because they got to go through and rebalance and do all the money for it in math. But you try to keep that balance in there. You don't have to go through and really do a lot of shifting. 401ks are probably the easiest, because the 401k, you make your distribution set those certain percentages, so you had diversification. But then you make your contribution the same way, and you really don't have to do anything anymore. It becomes kind of autopilot. You don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that when you have money going in like an IRA contribution once a year, or you start taking distributions, that you look at that balance a little bit more often. There's a lot of places that'll do that for you automatically. I still like doing the old-fashioned, let's take a peek at it. It's yep. worth the 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, and that's probably where the fight becomes between the Robinhood, the app-based investing. Venmo allows you to do something like that as well. Mm-hmm. And actually sitting down and talking with somebody and saying, are we really on the right track here? It's been a year since I looked at this.
And that's, you know, one of the things that we see, and for folks that are listening, and I'm a big subscriber to modern portfolio theory. It works. I'm not saying they know everything or they've gotten everything done, but these guys won Nobel Prizes because they're kind of smart. Okay, they're really bleeding smart.
Mm-hmm.
For one reason or another, I just figured it out. And so usually if we see a person who comes into our office and they got a problem with a portfolio, it's usually because their balance and their diversification is all screwed up. And so we usually have to correct that, and that usually corrects the problems of the portfolio.
715-845-2155 is the number to call if you've got a question for Merle. Good morning. You're Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch. Who are we talking to?
This is Jim.
Morning, Jim.
Hey, Merle. I just wanted to regress a little bit here or go back to the earlier conversation about EV vehicles. Mm-hmm. You had this call from a farmer, and you know, there are some, that farmer can't haul, you know, a load of cows for 500 miles round trip. But what about a building contractor or an electrician or a plumber that goes to a job site and they basically spend the whole day at one job site? Mm-hmm. Or another example would be an application such as like the Tesla semis that are hauling for Pepsi, and they're hauling nothing but potato chips, which have no weight.
There's no doubt about that.
And that is something, Jim, that we touched on right after that call.
Yeah, and I'm not saying there's not any application for it. I think in an urban area, there's a lot of great ideas for that. I just think that there's an issue over a long haul, especially with things that have weight. You know, the Tesla Semi, again, like the idea, I'm not sure it's going to work, because as soon as you put a large draw on electrical engines, they tend to have a big problem, mm-hmm. That the drawdown comes out and kills the batteries. Hence the reason that trains, yes, they actually do use an electrical engine, but the diesel we're hearing is firing up gigantic generators that run those DC engines. And so that's what we talked about, maybe the Synergy Drive, that idea is going to be a lot better. Now, can you imagine if you take, you know, somebody who makes tremendous internal combustion engines and they match them up with the technology that, for example, a Tesla has developed with electrical engines and systems, and they match them up. I think there's just a great winner there someplace. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with if you got a short-term delivery vehicle, or even, boy, some of the pizza places coming up with an EV place or EV vehicle for delivering pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
What a great idea, because you're not going that far. You're going quickly on the inside. Probably be a lot easier. You don't have to stop and spend time to fuel it, you mm-hmm. know, and at the end of the night, you plug it in and charge it.
Exactly.
I think there's some great uses to it. But I think in a rural area, I just don't think it's going to be very applicable.
Well, another application that I see might as more of a viable situation is electric school buses.
Potentially, yeah.
You know, they drop the kids off in the morning. They got the whole day to recharge, and then run another route in the afternoon.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying there's not applications. Certainly not the case. But I think that the cure-all for everything, electric vehicles are not.
All right. Indeed. Thanks for the call, Jim. Again, 715-845-2155 is the number to call if you have a question for Merle. We got This Day with Chris Conley coming up next here on WSAU. 8:54 on this Saturday morning on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU, and online at WSAU.com. I'm WSAU News Director Mike Leishner. He is Merle Kelch, and we are Making Financial Sense. And Merle is actually, I've got this part of the show already scripted, because I'm about to tell you that on the way home today, I'll make a nice investment in the 401k retirement fund by stopping at the local Quick Trip to buy a couple of sets of numbers tonight for a Powerball. Merle's about to tell me why that is a bad idea and why I should not consider that retirement income.
Well, here's how this goes. If you're going to buy a six-pack of the crullers, you know, the donuts,
mm-hmm.
That were going to cost you $6. If you skip that and you put that $6 to the you know, lottery tickets,
mm-hmm.
we could not only decide that that's probably a fairly good idea, because one, you're getting rid of something that's going to be potentially bad for your health and cost you more in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And you do have a certain probability, albeit small, to actually win the lottery ticket. So it's better for your health. You have a potential of gain. So thereby it might be good. Now, if you get the donuts and spend the money, now you've probably just spent money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but
this is my logic. I'm not really sure it's going anywhere.
Well, there may be a certain degree of truth to it, and that's actually what my theory is. You know, if you're going to cut something else out of the budget and maybe play for $8 or $10 when the jackpots do get in this high, which is becoming a little more frequent, but of course it's also very cyclical and based on several other factors, then yeah, that's just harmless, you know, gambling entertainment. In my mind, maybe a down payment on some of your property taxes, because you do get the lottery credit here in Wisconsin for the taxes. And of course, you don't know exactly what that'll be. But as long as you're not spending hundreds of dollars a month, it generally will come back to you. But if you're doing it because, you know, it's this high and you're still spending the money that you normally would, then that's where it creeps up into the area of a problem.
That's right, especially if you start saying, well, I'm going to spend $100 a week. Well, then maybe that's kind of an issue. Yeah.
Yes.
But never $6, skip the donuts, you're good.
Yeah. Never chase your losses. All those good advice that they give us that occasionally like to engage in sports betting and things like that. Always bet what you can afford to lose. Do not go overboard. And for Pete's sake, do not chase your losses.
And it's the difference of want versus need. And I don't know if we need a lottery ticket, but you don't need the donut. So maybe that's a switch over.
Yeah. Now you're starting to sound like my mother.
Yeah. Well, Dalai Lama actually is where this comes from. So I think if we got a minute here, I'm assuming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So the Dalai Lama, he actually had said inside of an article, and it's been a year since I read it, but he said he likes Madison, Wisconsin, inside of his article. He says because there's a grocery store that he likes to go to in Madison, Wisconsin, because they have so many chocolates.
Okay.
The Dalai Lama loves chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and here's where I define the difference between want and need. He said, if it's a want and you expurge on your wants, he said, no doubt comes to something bad in your life. He said, when I go to the store, he said, I want all the chocolate. He said, but if I eat and I buy all the chocolate, not only have I spent a lot of money, he said, but now I'm going to eat all that chocolate and it's not going to be good for my health.
That is correct.
He said, but I need to taste one piece. He said, so I'll go there and I'll maybe buy one or two pieces of chocolate and I'll greatly enjoy it till the next time I come back around. And so then he goes on to say the difference between want and need. Need are the things that you need to have throughout the course of your life, whether it's need for something emotional or need for something you need to get done, but there's a need for it. But if it's a pure want, he said you could probably rent it at a cheaper price because you don't want to have all of it because it's going to turn out bad someplace.
There is a lot of truth to that.
So if you want a Corvette, just rent one for the weekend because you probably, because that takes care of that need that you might have. But the want is going to cost you a lot of money and problems later in the future.
Scratch that itch, I believe is what they would say.
Well, perfectly said.
Now, Merle, in the last few seconds that we have, in the event that the $1.2-something billion winning ticket is sold here tonight in Wausau, Wisconsin, who is the first person that the winner should call, you or Ellen Haugum?
We'll set up a conference call.
All right.
Because it's a dual thing at the same time.
All right. Conference
Perfect.
Call.
A conference call.
Between you and Ellen Haugum. I've got both of you on speed dial, I'm just saying.
Perfect.
Merle, how do they get a hold of you here in Wausau during the week?
Folks, stop and visit us. 3rd Avenue and Bridge Street in Wausau. Stop on in, have a cup of coffee, say hello and hi. Say hi to Kim with her new sling until she gets her shoulder rebuilt. She's going to have a bionic shoulder. I can't wait to see how far she can throw when she's done. So stop in, say hello and hi. You can call us locally, 715-849-3600. Outside of the Wausau area at 866-355-5100. Or always find us online at KelchAssociates.com.